So the Dublin Fringe, it's always an amazing festival. You're an acclaimed poet. You're also a live performer of poetry. But your show in the Dublin Fringe this year is really your biggest work to date, perhaps.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's the biggest thing I've ever worked on. Like, I've been messing around with a novel for a long time, and I've written some scripts, and I wrote for television and stuff like that. And I've always been, in my own mind, more than a poet, you know? Like, I did more, there was other ways I wrote, but I didn't get as much of an outlet with that stuff. So this is a really exciting thing for me. Nerve-wracking and exciting, you know, because I get to show that side of my writing. And I put a lot of work into it. Like, and the play was like nearly three times as big as it is now. It's been sharpened to really kind of slick and fit animal now. And Mark O'Brien, the director, has been working hard on it. And Eric, the actor, they're like really, really invested in it as well now. So that's brilliant, because with a poem, you know, I write it, I perform it, it's all me, and I'm directly responsible for it. But with a collaborative project like this, some exciting things happen that you didn't expect, and it's like the words are a good stake, and then you've got all this production and sound and lighting and stuff, and that's like the wine, you know, that just like accentuates the experience. And like, I can't wait to see how it all flows, you know. Like, I've been in rehearsals and stuff like that, but it really comes alive in front of an audience. That's when it's really a play. And I can't wait, but I'm nervous as well, you know, because it's my first time, and I love doing things that I haven't done before, you know. I think that's how you grow as an artist, or how you grow as a person, is to try new things. So
absolutely.
I was really grateful of the opportunity to, like, I was commissioned to write the play, you know. Mighty Axis, who are great at supporting local artists out that way, and I have a connection to Ballymun. I lived there as a kid, and I worked with the Axis a lot. So this is the product of a long relationship that I've had with the Axis, and they've been really supportive of me over the years, you know. So it's great.
And so the play is called Forsyrsia. Tell us a bit, Colin, what the play is about.
It's about a man coming to terms with being a father, first and foremost, but really it's about what becoming a father does to a man's identity. And then even beyond that, it's about how, like, the struggles anybody has to deal to keep themselves together when they're challenged, when they're under pressure, you know. So he effectively breaks apart in the story, psychologically, physically, like, it's just mental in some ways, what goes on for him. And we kind of shed versions of ourselves at big moments in our lives, and some of those are more dramatic than others, and he's gone through, he doesn't realise it at the time because he's just so busy moving, which is like a lot of time for people in life, like, they're too busy to realise what's happening to them, and he's like that, and he's coming to terms with the great change in him, and that's what it's about. And it's linked in with, like, the Ballymun Towers being taken down, because that's his identity and that's gone. And then the relationship that he had with the woman with Emily, the girl he's gone out with, like, that's gone, you know. Like, they're just, and so everything's up in the air for him, and he's nowhere really to hang his hat. And, like, he's kind of caught up in the housing crisis and stuff like that, too. So it's kind of about everything, but it's really just about one man trying to come to terms being a dad at the end of the day, which is something that we can all relate to, as, like, myself, Mark, and Eric. Mark's father of two kids. He's like, Eric's just after having his first child. And for me, being a father is really connected to who I am as a person. So we've all got skin in the game. Like, so that's what it's about. And that's become, over time, the most important element of it, is what it means to be a father, what it means to be a man, and how that comes out when fatherhood comes in. Because you start to connect with your own history of, like, your father, how he was with you. Like, everything kind of comes under close examination when you realise that you're responsible for another person. So it's all of that. And then it's like a caper. Like, it's a bit of crack as well. He's literally just running around town trying to get sorted and trying to get into town, and things are getting in his way, and he meets some mad people. There's a lot of conflict in it. Yeah, and, like, Emily, the mother of the child, her mother-in-law just doesn't have any time for the main character, Kreiner, at all. She just thinks he's a waste of space. And, yeah, there's a lot of people making it hard for him to be a good man as well. So it's all about that, really.
And people have spoken of there being a crisis in masculinity at the moment. Is that something you yourself agree with? And, you know, like, male suicide rates are at an all-time high. I mean, do you see this character as a product of a particular background, or do you think this is something for men in general?
It's definitely something for men in general. Like, I've been working with young men all around the country just through the work I do on skills and the workshops I do for young people. And a lot of men are feeling it's a paradox. Like, they're very powerful and they've got a lot of strength, but at the same time they feel very vulnerable and they feel under attack, because there's a lot out there in the world, like feminism, like we got fourth wave feminism or whatever happening, and some men are feeling a bit threatened. But, like, you know, my job as a writer is always to encourage them to just be themselves and to do the right thing and to listen, you know. But that's the challenge now. But, like, when it wasn't that, it was something else. Like, I think the suicide rate is an indication of that. Like, men are hardest a lot of the time on themselves, and there's all this stuff about they won't give themselves permission to be vulnerable. And Craner, the character in the play, is going through all of that as well. And really, as well, it's about, like, I had to come of age in a kind of rougher area where I got told what I was all the time, just because of what I looked like, just because of my accent. Being a young man now is as hard as it's ever been. You could say it's harder because, like, all the different circumstances that the crash brought in, like, there's no jobs. It's, and then, like, just you're under so much pressure. There's a lot of focus on you now. Like, if you're a teenager, or a young person, you're just online all the time. And, like, compared to other people and all of that stuff, like, factors into this contemporary crisis that we're supposed to be having. But, you know, if you think back to, I don't know, like, even just mythical figures like Hugh Cullen or something, they were struggling to be men, you know what I mean? Like, because sometimes it's other men, sometimes it's circumstances, and yeah, that all comes to play in it. And it's really a play about what it means to be a man, I think, and all of those struggles, pressures from outside, pressures from inside, mental yeah. health issues, financial circumstances, they're all there in the mix as well, you know?
Yeah, and in a way, I guess this is a portrait of one man, but what you're talking about is quite a universal theme, the kind of age-old struggle of what it means to be human, which, you know, women have just as much as men, which every single person on this planet wrestles with, how to be themselves, how to be a human being in the world. You mentioned yeah. about feminism. I mean, feminism to me, as a definition, is about the equal rights for women as human beings, in the same way that you would have yep. equal human rights for all individuals. But I have
seen... Yeah, like, and Craner in the story would be somebody that he wouldn't really know it, but he wouldn't know the terms for this type of stuff, but he would be, you know, a feminist in that it's just like he's fighting for rights to see his daughter, he's trying to support his partner as best he can, he's trying to do the right thing, but he doesn't really know how to verbalise a lot of things. Yeah. And that's, like, just kind of the voices in the play where he falls into the past, he falls into other elements of himself where those things come up, but they're not done literally, you know what I mean? They're done, like, in an abstract way, which are the kind of most challenging part of the play. But he is just finding it hard to be himself, which is kind of really a very, like, it doesn't matter whether he's a man or a woman or whatever gender he is, he's just struggling. And, like, that's what it's about. I think, like, a lot of people in Ireland are struggling and they're trying to pretend that they're okay.
Well, as you said, you know, we're in a difficult time. I mean, the housing emergency, you know, because it's not a crisis, it's an emergency, and it's yeah. only snowballing and getting worse. And we have a government who seem unable or unwilling to really properly address it. I mean, you know, you look back at things like the famine, or, you know, it feels like that this is of kind of seismic proportions, because a home is such a basic right. And if you actually can't have that basic unit of survival, I don't know what's going to happen to society.
That's, like, I wrote a piece there, and it'll be out this week, about just, like, home as a word. It's so loaded and it means so much. But, like, it's starting to mean less and less for people. It's starting to not be something you can assume you're going to have, you know. And then, like, Craner, as a character in the play, he's going through in a very clear-cut way. He doesn't have a home, and Emily's living in a hotel waiting to be housed because of the crisis. But there's so many different ways you can feel under threat. You can feel insecure, because the way the country finds itself, like, you know, you can be living at home, but, like, are you ever going to get out there? You're living with your parents. You can be renting. That can be just, the rug can be pulled out of you literally at any second with the way the laws are in favour of the landlords here. They can just tell you that they want you to live and you have to live. You know, you can have a mortgage, but like anything can knock that off. You know, if you get sick, if you have any issues at all, any kind of financial pressures, you can lose the means to pay for your gas. So all of that stuff is everybody, the security that we had, like that old idea of like you'd have a job for life. The idea of a home for life is really kind of disappearing, you know, and that something has to be done to protect that for people, because really what you're protecting is you're protecting the person's right to stability. Because the home is everything. Without that, we're like walking ghosts without a home. And the city is full of ghosts now. And there's so many people. Like, the play is all about collapse and the idea of falling through floors. But everybody's doing that. And, like, there's no, you don't know where the bottom is anymore. People going, yeah. It used to be like, yeah, okay, you can't pay me mortgage, but maybe I can get a council gaff till I'm back on my feet. But that's gone now. Like, if you fall out of, if the floor underneath you disappears, you don't know where you're going to land. It's like a low burning fear that's just niggling away at the whole city now. Like, I don't know what it's like. I can't speak for rural communities and stuff like that, but where land is at a premium, that's the fear that's on everyone's mind. Like, I'm talking to a friend last night, a really great artist, and he's like, I'm probably just, my lease is up in January and I'm probably just, I don't know what's going to happen then. But he can't even let himself think about that right now, you know? So everyone's rocking those kind of subplots, and all that's in the play, it's a man, it's a young man, working class man, coming up in a very particular and recognisable environment. But what he's going through is what everyone's going through, and hopefully, I really hope that he speaks for us all and gives us all, lets us all look at that and lets us all feel that for a while. Because a lot of the time, we're just so busy trying to keep things going and trying to make ends meet that we don't really sit in what's happened to us for the past 10 years. You know. We've been through the mill in this country and we've sacrificed loads and we still don't really have firm ground to stand on.
And in terms of these issues, I mean, you described yourself as someone coming of age in a rougher area. Do you consider yourself a working class writer, or do you not kind of want to be pigeonholed into any particular box, or how do you feel about that aspect of your
work? Like the area that I'm going out to now, and like a lot of areas that I grew up in, people tell you what you are all the time. And like, labels have a lot of currency now. So like, I can call myself a working class writer and that gets me a certain amount of traction, right? But like, what happens then when I don't want to be a working class writer? What if I want to be just a writer? And like the place I'm walking out to now, or that I'm on the bus, sorry about the noise in the background, but like, if I'm coming out here now, or as I come out here now to Ballymun is beyond definition. Like, the borders were forced on Ballymun. It had some of the strictest borders in the city because people didn't want to say they lived there. So anyone who was outside, it says, there's the line, yous are inside, we're outside. And it was forced to be this thing. For the whole city, like, it was this kind of symbol. And then the people of Ballymun are like a lot of working class people, it's like, I'll be what I want to be. And that's the ultimate thing of, like, about story, is, like, the protagonist steps out his door that morning, and or she steps out that door that morning, and you can become whatever you want. And it's not where you are, it's where you're going. And I think that's one of the things that's really powerful about the story. You know, I can say, yes, it's a working class play. Yes, I'm a working class writer, but I'm not doing the work justice to just reduce it to that, you know. I could say it's a male play, but it's not. Like, it's about a human. So it's like, but then at the same time, I am not ashamed of my working class background, you know, and like, that's where I'm from, and I'm proud of what it's made me, and I'm proud of the community I come from. And in terms of like, those communities are under attack with the housing prices and stuff. The idea of community and the understanding what community is to me comes from, you can knock next door and you can ask the person for help. That is kind of under threat now, and that needs to be held on to. And it is as strong as it ever was in places like Ballymun and Clondalkin, where I live now, and Tallaght, Finglas. You know, all of these areas that, famously, if you put them on your CV, you mightn't get the job. But they're places to be proud of too, and are full of people who are raising kids and doing the right thing and doing their best.
Absolutely.
So that's a really long-winded answer to, am I a working class writer? Well, yes, I am, and no, I am. You know,
yeah.
It depends on who's saying it to me.
I think, though, the thing is really that I'm conscious that we need to make sure there are opportunities for working class writers, rather than, and what we must resist is working class writer as a genre, which is something that can go in and out of fashion. But it can often be that people who or in the creative arts, often sometimes because in order to get off the blocks and to start out, you're not getting paid at the beginning. And sometimes that just means it's easier for people from more well-to-do backgrounds to actually get into those professions.
Yeah, like if you think of like the reason working class as an idea, as a trope, as this concept of like working class literature or working class writing, the reason that's in vogue in Ireland again, like part of it might be about the idea, like identity politics and like knowing where you're from and owning that and stuff. But part of it is also about like that there is a working class element of art that hasn't been there before in Ireland, that's been given voice. And like some people would say, oh yeah, we're trying to be representative and we're given that, like, you know, the establishment has decided to give the working class a voice. But the other thing is like what I was saying earlier on is like about Ballymun, where it became, it insisted on being what it wanted to be. Like, there's working class writing out there now because working class writers insisted on being part of the establishment or forced themselves up to be, gave voice to themselves. You know, I think that's the most important thing. Like, so when I'm saying I'm a working class writer, that's what I'm saying. I came from a certain type of background that doesn't necessarily have access, and I can't even decide to not be a working class writer. Like, you know, people will say working class as soon as they open my mouth, just because of my accent. And I could pretend not to have this accent if I wanted. Like the way some kids, when they start writing poems, they start putting weird art down and stuff like that because they think poets have to sound a certain way. And there's always a lot of that mimicry. But I remember deciding to hold on to this accent. I remember people trying to put me down for having this accent. Like, I worked in business for 20 years and I held on to it because I was like, this is who I am. And it's a great filter. Like, you know, you learn a lot about a person if you talk like this to them, and then they make all assumptions, and genuine people are just open-minded, you know. And I think like it's really important to recognise what's happened in the past 10 years in terms of what it means to be a working class writer, you know, because there has been a shift.
And as well, you're someone who's very committed to and for a long time have been doing work in the community, but you're also helping other young people on their journey and giving them a path forward, and the workshops you do in schools as well, because sometimes it might be considered a bit uncool to be, but you're doing things with like rap and spoken word and you're making it really accessible to young people.
Yeah, but I'm not patronising them either, like, by saying, look, you can do writing too. Here's all these easy ways into it. Like, if I'm given enough time with someone, I'm showing them everything. Because I remember Stud Terkel, the writer, saying years ago about, he told a lovely story about a fella who became an expert in America on opera. And he was just like some guy that walked in a factory somewhere, and he was passing the venue and the door was ajar. And he heard this beautiful music coming out, and he opened the door and it kind of broke his heart, the beauty of this music. And he went home and he read up on it, and he became like an autodidact. He became like one of the, like a really foremost expert on opera. And it was because he had access to it and he was shown it. And like, that's what I do. Like, so like spoken word might be used as a gateway or rap, but then before they know it, like, I'm showing them, like, you know, Tintern Abbey by Wordsworth, or I'm showing them Proof Rock, or I'm showing them like Emily Dickinson stuff, you know. And I'm kind of taking them into, because part of it is, like, the rising tide lifts all boats. And I was helped and encouraged to be what I wanted to be from the age of, like, from, like, my dad was just making me read Steinbeck, like, when I was 10, you know. And he was like, why wouldn't you read it? Like, what's stopping you? So I'm the same with people. And I do think, like, I've managed to grow into something that I wanted to be. And, like, I think I owe to other people to help them do that as well. So, you know, rap and spoken word is often an easy way into that for them, but that's not all they're going to get, you know. I'm going to sneak in the other stuff through the back door too.
And as well, you've got a book of poetry out at the moment as well, Randomer, which is a really amazing poetry collection, your second collection.
Thank you. Yeah, second one, yeah.
So what are the dates for the play column?
The 18th to the 22nd of September out in the Access Theatre. And it would be great if anyone from the north side who finds it easier to get to it can just come out and see it, because the thing about the fringe, most of the venues are in the city centre, so a lot of the punters who are fringe regulars, they like to just knock about town, get in two or three shows out that way. So I think we've got our work cut out for us a little bit, being so far out of the city. But in its favour, it's out local for a lot of people. Like, I'm hoping a lot of people from Ballymun will come to see it, and like close by. So it'd be great if anyone out this way can come and see it, you know. 19th is the official opening night. I'd say that's going to be busy and a bit of crack. Like, the tickets are moving well, you know. So it's a challenging play in some ways, but it's got a real kind of straightforward character, trying to get things done at the centre of it that everybody can relate to, you know. So there's a lot of surprises in it as well, and it's a bit of a laugh.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And tell us as well, because I know that you've got a writer's retreat coming up, if anyone's interested in that. Tell us a bit about that as well.
Yeah, like, that just came out doing the workshops. I've got, I take people away for a weekend up to a beautiful house in Rathdrum in the Wicklow Mountains, and it's just a chance to kind of settle into yourself and then get back in touch with your creativity. If life is getting in the way, you can buy that time for yourself and, like, just come away for two nights up in Rathdrum, and it's called the Kingfisher Writers Retreat, and you can look it up online. I have a website. You can just look up Colin Keegan Poetry and all the info is there. That's good crack. That's one of my favourite things to do myself, actually. I get a lot out of it still, even though I do it, like, quite regularly, you know. It's just nice because, like, again, people are so busy. And I always say to starting to young writers or anyone starting off, is like, you have to take time and pay the attention to yourself and your own art, and then you have to make the time as well. So it's a great way to do that. Just say, right, I'm away for the weekend, see you later, to the rest of your life, and then just focus on it. So, yeah, that's the next one is the 12th of October, so I'm looking forward to that.
And as well, I think
thanks for letting me plug it there.
And there's a lot of noise in our day-to-day lives as well, so I think just that space and time to sort of to be quiet and listen to your inner voice, yeah, which for writing is really important.
Yeah, like, remember, I think Heaney said things have to sink down really deep before they pop back up again, and that's when you know you have a poem, like, but it has to percolate for a while. And a lot of that comes up for people when they give themselves the time to sit still. It's like, you remember a story of a Native American Indian that used to get off a plane in America, and one of the attendants was saying to him, why do you always sit for hours after the plane lands? Like, everyone's gone home and you have to still be. And he says, I'm waiting on my soul to catch up. Because it's like when we're moving so fast, we can leave bits of ourselves behind. And it's good to, as like, if you're trying to be creative, it's good to kind of sit and catch up with yourself sometimes. So that's what the retreat's about. That's what it's about for me, and that's what I like to offer to other people. So,
fantastic. Well, listen, we'll do a post on the writer's retreat and also the play for Saoirse on our Facebook page. And that's going to be on as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival, and it's going to be amazing. So listen, thank you so much for joining us on the Art Show.
To say, yeah, thanks a million, Norma. And just to say, there's like deals on the Fringe website. So if you wanted to go for Saoirse, you can like buy a voucher and you can go for two or three plays at a time. Like, so they're really good at making, like, if you want to get into theatre, Fringe is the place to do it. Even if you've never been to a play before, you can go and see three or four in the one day, and it's great crack. But just make sure you stick for Saoirse into your little, if you're going on a little theatre caper, try and just make it sure to stick for Saoirse in there as well. Thanks a million, Norma.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, and best of luck with it.